From the KTO Newsroom, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins with this update. Temperatures in Juneau have been well below 24-degree average low temperature for January, and that makes it tough for over 200 homeless people in Juneau. KTO's Matt Miller has more about people's options for getting in out of the cold.
People are coming into the Glory Hole, downtown Juneau's homeless shelter and soup kitchen. It's lunchtime, and there's already a short line for rice and chow mein. Rodney Jackson tells me he's been homeless for the last 15 years. He says he'd gather things to cover up and find sheltered areas to stay warm and out of the wind. He says he wonders what kept him alive.
It was scary. Sometimes I'd cry myself to sleep. Yeah.
If it's that cold, though, can you really get to sleep? I mean, is it hard getting to sleep when it's that cold?
Yes. Sometimes I wouldn't even sleep.
Jackson says he would sometimes drink heavily so he could fall asleep in the cold. Another lunch visitor, Jerry, who did not want us to use his last name, talks about the unique challenges of sleeping outside in Juneau.
The wind blew our sleeping bag across the street, all the way across the street. My girlfriend got mad at me. Quit hogging the blankets. I said, our blankets are across the street.
Jerry laughs about it, but Brad Perkins from the St. Vincent de Paul Society of Juneau says it can be tough for those living on the street, especially during extreme winter conditions.
It leads to a form of PTSD. Already all of our clients, you know, have challenges in life, and, you know, and being homeless is a huge challenge. But when the weather gets like this, it adds an extra burden on them. It makes doing the simple things even almost impossible.
According to the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, there were 220 homeless in Juneau last year. Over 80 of those were considered to be chronically homeless, or those who cannot find a permanent place to stay or have been repeatedly homeless. Jackson and Jerry cannot stay overnight at the Glory Hole right now. Only 36 people can stay there, and only for 30 days at a time. They'll have to go to the emergency warming shelter operated by St. Vincent de Paul in the Mendenhall Valley.
The Glory Hall is a nicer place to stay, and if you can stay there, you should go stay there. But we're the last resort and low barrier, and we'll take anybody.
The shelter started with cots for 28 people, but 44 slept there January 6th, the most ever, just as temperatures started diving this month.
That's a lot of people. We had some people sleeping, sitting up, and things like that.
So Perkins says they're knocking down some walls so they can expand the shelter space and take in more people.
So we're doing everything we can because the weather's pretty nasty outside.
Perkins says a shuttle bus loops through town every evening to pick up residents. They also serve up a bedtime snack and a volunteer cook's breakfast before everyone leaves at 7 a.m. Jackson says the warming shelter's cots may not be quite as comfortable as the Glory Hall's bunk beds, but...
It sure beats sleeping outside in the cold.
Jerry, who lost his sleeping bag to the wind, likes the warming shelter, although it might be a little noisy for light sleepers.
Just the issues with, you know, people snoring or talking in their sleep. Yeah. Other than that, everything's good. I like the staff out there. You know, they're fun.
Though Jerry says it's tough to wait until the 11 p.m. check-in time, especially if it gets real cold and windy in the afternoon and evening. Cold air from Canada is responsible for this month's cold snap and windy conditions in Juneau. Temperatures are expected to remain between 0 and 20 degrees, at least through this weekend. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Basketball has long been Southeast Alaska's favorite high school sport. But as Karabidi's Eric Stone reports, cuts to Alaska's state ferry system have made it harder for teams to travel.
So I grew up in Texas, and in the nation's second largest state, every small town's high school football team is its pride and joy. But up here, there's another sport that dominates the coastal rainforest of Southeast Alaska.
Pretty much every school in Southeast has a basketball program.
That's Jamie Cabral. He's activities director at Petersburg High School. It's an indoor sport, so unlike baseball or football, basketball teams aren't at the mercy of the weather. But Southeast Alaska's geography makes travel difficult. It's not like on the road system where...
Everyone's pretty used to the yellow bus where you can go on a Wednesday night and come back and you're back home Wednesday evening.
Here, it's a lot more complicated. The yellow school buses, of course, don't sail up and down the inside passage. So there are basically two choices, a ferry ride or a more expensive flight. Cabral says that for years, the Alaska Marine Highway System has made it easy and cheap for his teams to get to other towns.
In years past, we were able to get to Ketchikan very simply, leaving, you know, on a Friday and then coming home on a Sunday and missing minimal school.
But last year, the state government cut more than $43 million from the ferry budget. That's meant fewer winter sailings during basketball season.
With the cutbacks, what we're looking at is we're flying a lot more and taking a lot less participants just because of the increase in cost.
Because flying is, of course, more expensive, and that could take its toll next year.
I can definitely see us in the future scheduling fewer games.
But even with plenty of games on the schedule this year, Cabral says taking fewer students isn't ideal.
It will have the trickle-down effect. You get less games for your younger kids.
And that could disadvantage the basketball program for years to come. Troy Thane is athletic director at Craig High School on Prince of Wales Island.
You want to be able to send your freshmen and sophomores, the JV group, and so they can get the competition they need so you can have strong varsity programs.
He says in-game experience is critical.
The more games you can get those kids, you know, obviously the stronger they're going to be in the later years.
So it's bad news when a reduced ferry schedule means fewer students can go get that real game experience. But like his colleague in Petersburg, Thane says Craig hasn't had to reduce its varsity schedule. Folks in Angoon haven't been so lucky.
Well, already we've lost a series of home games because a visiting school simply couldn't afford to fly.
Angoon High School's principal and athletic director is Ron Gleason.
Losing home games, is a significant blow to the community.
And when the team does get to play away games, Gleason says they, too, are taking fewer students. But that's not Gleason's biggest concern.
The sports programs are a vital part, but they pale in comparison to our now inability to get food for our lunch programs, food for the community through our only store, medical services.
The 500-person Admiralty Island community lost ferry service in November after the state balked at the ferry Lacanti's repair bill. It was $4 million more than budgeted. The ferry Teslina has filled some of the service gaps this winter, but soon it will be out of service for modifications. There are 5 runs scheduled in March. State transportation officials say those are to ensure there's ferry transportation for schools in Juneau's regional gold medal basketball tournament. But the cuts to state ferries affect students' cultural education as well. Cabral, Petersburg's athletic director, says it's important for the students to get to know their neighbors.
As part of their education, I think it's huge. Our kids rarely get out of their community.
So when he's in Ketchikan, he'll take the kids to see the Coast Guard station or the shipyard. Seeing other towns, he says, helps tie the region together.
Every chance we go somewhere, we try to find something that's important to that community as well. So the connections that they create in Southeast is huge, I think, for Southeast as a cultural piece.
But these days, fewer students are getting that opportunity. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
And in other news, police in Anchorage have released the name of a man injured in an officer-involved shooting over the weekend. He's charged with 2 felony assaults and reckless endangerment after pointing a crossbow at people in different parts of town before the confrontation with APD officers. Police Chief Justin Dahl gave a brief press conference Sunday after the shooting.
The person was described as an adult male wearing dark clothing, wearing a ski mask, and the crossbow was described as being loaded, and also that the male subject was pointing it at people in the area.
The man was first reported at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday morning at a busy intersection in Spinard. About 2 hours later, he was seen again near a traffic exchange on the south side of town, and officers hurried to the scene.
The subject pointed the crossbow at the officers. 2 officers fired their weapons. There was a brief foot chase, and the suspect was taken into custody.
According to the charges, 35-year-old Dustin Folsey was hit twice by police bullets, but his injuries are not life-threatening. He appeared in a wheelchair on Monday at an arraignment at the Anchorage Correctional Complex. And Girdwood dog musher Nicholas Petit has won his 3rd Copper Basin 300 in a row. According to the Copper Basin Race website, Petit crossed the finish line in Glen Allen on Monday at 1:48 p.m., just 16 minutes ahead of Eureka musher and 2-time Yukon Quest champ Brent Sass. That's a narrower gap from last year by about half when Petit and Sass also finished 1st and 2nd. You're listening to KTOO. And taking a quick look at the weather for the rest of tonight, it's going to be cold and around 2 degrees.